discussing national and international issues. You're listening to Pella Neuroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pella Neuroth-Taylor Show. Welcome to the Pella Neuroth-Taylor Show on this Monday afternoon, the 22nd of April. We've got a two-hour show and the usual four guests. And the theme is, well, you guessed it, war, perhaps. War. There's nothing about war going on in the world. And obviously, the big question on many people's minds is, how do we stop these wars? We've got Alex Kreiner, who's a returning guest, who's a market analyst, researcher, and trader, and hedge fund manager, who's got lots of interesting ideas on his Substack page, which a lot of people read. He thinks that we can actually appeal to current legislation against funding terrorism to avoid paying our taxes to our warmongering governments. And he spells out all the explanation and all the facts that we can face our governments with the added convenience that we don't have to pay taxes because it's illegal. Doesn't that sound great? Our second guest is Christine Hart, another returning guest of ours, a friend who is a journalist and private investigator, and who was involved in a lot of the hacking scandals of the 90s and noughties, where the British tabloids broke into people's, famous people's voicemail boxes, and there were a lot of impersonation scandals and so on, all in the chase of that scoop on the celebrity. Well, there are developments there in the legal sphere involving Hugh Grant, and she's going to tell us about that, and Princess Diana, and more. Our third guest after the hour is Dirk Poelman, a very seasoned journalist, a TNT host with us. And we're going to talk about one of our favorite topics. He's an old friend of mine. How journalists and politicians are pressured and spied on from the Cold War until today. In case you wondered why politicians do what they do and journalists in the mainstream write the way they write. Finally, we've got an associated topic to all the foreign wars that we're going on about, but not directly so, because a lot of the MAGA, American First movement, worries and talks about all this money going into the bottomless pit of Ukrainian corruption, and instead of on the problems that affect America itself. In this, we've got an election, obviously, in case anyone didn't know, in November. And one of the big problems is the American people's addiction to drugs, crack. There's an opioid epidemic and an antidepressant epidemic, which is more sort of behind the curtain suburban problem, but equally as big as the opioid epidemic. And we've got a very top professor of medicine from Stanford, Anna Lemke, who's going to tell us about how the dopamine, it all comes down to dopamine, which is one of the neurotransmitters, and how we can wean ourselves off our addictive behavior to these medicines and in all areas of our life, and to make life happier, basically. And that could be one of the solutions to this these epidemics of drugs. And that's the sort of thing that presidents should be focused on, looking after their own people. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about, kick off with this big news. Well, a couple of big news. Lavrov, the Soviet Russian foreign minister, talks about West balancing on the edge of direct military confrontation between the nuclear powers. That's a big headline, and it comes from TASS. And the Russians obviously trying to signal something, because usually they talk in small letters rather than capital letters. We also have this firing of the Israeli chief of military intelligence today, ostensibly because of the failure of the Israelis to be aware that this October 7th attack by Hamas was going to take place. There were scripts saying, well, this is something going on here on the other side of the border, but the Israelis chose to ignore it, and he's had to carry the can for that. But my question is whether it was only that, or there was something more sinister. Now, what I wanted to focus on is the fact that one of the world's famous, I could say, alternative media journalists, Pepe Escobar, has come out with a bombshell this weekend where he claims on his Twitter feed that the Israelis tried to send up an F-35 equipped with a nuclear bomb that they were going to send in and detonate over Tehran, not to nuke the place, sort of killing lots of people, but to create an electromagnetic pulse, which is one of the side effects of a nuclear explosion. And that would have frazzled a lot of Iran's technical communications, maybe TV sets, maybe war communications, and all the rest of it, just to send a very, very strong signal. Now, he says he has two separate sources. He's been in Asia for 30 years. He's really well connected, really well respected by his peers. He has two separate connections, presumably verifying independently in Asia, saying this thing. And he's going to come up with more, because there's been a lot of pushback on the internet from other alternative media journalists saying this can't be true, because apparently this F-35, which is going to detonate this explosion above Tehran, was taken down by a Russian missile or a Russian plane as it was on its way. So these are huge developments. It indicates that the Russians have very good intelligence, what the Israelis are up to. And although one can't welcome this development, it was better than the alternative, obviously. So Pepe Escobar is under pressure, I guess, for his own reputation to firm up that allegation. So far, there's nothing in the mainstream media. And maybe that's a good thing, I don't know. If it all becomes sort of official, then maybe we really have to do something about it. So I'll put it up there in the maybe category, but doubtless very, very interesting because it obviously, a lot of people, the pushback includes the fact that, well, where is the rescue operation taking place if it happened over Jordan or Syria? We haven't seen planes in the sky. Would the Israelis really be so foolish as to send a single plane without a sort of support? Where has the Western sort of massive response been to sort of cope with this? I can't believe they'd support it. And where lots of buts and ifs there. And in, you know, would an F-35 even be capable of carrying a large enough nuclear weapon to create this EMP pulse? And the alternative, of course, is a gigantic psyops by someone or other, maybe someone who's prepared to burn their contact Pepe Escobar, who will have suffered reputational fallout from this. Maybe the Israelis themselves, could be the Russians, could be anyone. Anyway, we're going to perhaps discuss this in other news in the Middle East with Basil Valentine, after our redoubtable news editor and political editor, after the break. This is the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show, back with Basil after the break.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show. We've got Basil Valentine, our political editor, with us. What do you reckon on that story, Basil? Any truth to it, or is it just a nothing burger or a psyops?
I think it's probably a nothing burger, Pelle, to be honest. And good afternoon to all our viewers and listeners all around the world. Yeah, Pepe Escobar is a very highly respected source on the left-wing side of journalism, very much an anti-imperialist, and somebody, you know, who usually knows what they're talking about. But we haven't seen any reports of this anywhere else. I think he may have been misled for some reason. The idea that the Russians would shoot down an Israeli aircraft is quite fanciful in the first place, let alone one that was carrying a nuclear weapon. But we are in an era of shadow boxing. We don't know exactly how much damage was done to certain Israeli military installations by the Iranians. On the one hand, it's claimed that virtually no damage was done, 99% intercepted. Other reports are that, in fact, no, some hypersonic missiles did get through, more like 3 or 4%, and they were able to showcase the ability of the Iranians to strike deep within Israel if they wanted, and that they have the weaponry to bypass the Iron Dome. But again, we don't know that either. What we do know, and this is the problem really with a lot of the coverage, is that there's all this talk about the posturing and maneuvering between Israel and Iran. And as a result, in the UK as well, we've got all this absolute nonsense about Gideon Falter and the police in London on Saturday, taking up huge amounts of oxygen in the media space, ridiculous amounts. He's calling for the Met Police Commissioner to resign. And meanwhile, what doesn't get reported, 210 bodies recovered from mass graves near the Nasser hospital compound. This is the site of an atrocity. Associated Press are reporting the burial area was built when Israeli forces were besieging the hospital last month. At the time, people were not able to bury the dead in the cemetery, and they dug graves in the hospital yard. Some of the bodies were killed, people killed during the siege, others killed when forces raided the hospital, many of them patients, apparently, others medical staff. 210 people buried in the sand in the grounds of a hospital. And that's the Nasser hospital. That's not the Al-Shifa hospital. That is a similar horror show. Imagine for a moment that there were the graves of 210 Israelis in the grounds of a hospital. We would never hear the end of it. Likewise, we can't prove what happened between Iran and Israel and whether or not this fighter set off. But then again, nor can Israel provide any evidence of terrorist links between United Nations Relief and Works Agency staff, the people doing their best to feed the starving Palestinians, and Hamas. Colonna has said, even now, fully 2 months on, January it was, when they made the initial accusations, causing Britain and the United States to suspend aid immediately. 3 months on, there's still no evidence, none at all. That hasn't stopped the US suspending all aid for, I think, 5 years. I think they passed a law in Congress saying they wouldn't supply any more aid for 5 years. Absolutely ridiculous.
And now they're passing this Israeli bill, aren't they, which is going to give Israel even more weapons. Is it $14 billion for Israel or something?
26.
Which is an increase on what they promised before. So Israel is being rewarded rather than punished. I mean, if you, on a sort of behavioristic terms, whatever that kind of psychology says, you respond to incentives. America's kind of giving the green light there. They're saying, well, we might say one thing, but we're kind of doing another. We're upping the support. And what I thought was rather disgusting was the Europeans, foreign ministers are meeting up in Brussels today. And of course, if you just follow, I think, Viktor Orban, who's that sort of fly on the wall, as it were, for the rest of the normal public, they're just warmongering all the time. They're talking about sending in troops. I mean, they're a psychotic little cult bunch sitting in one of those European conference center rooms. I've seen them, and talking to each other and not talking to the public. And they're just escalating. And they're talking about barring Russian shadow exports of oil, which might mean blockading tankers. God knows that's what the Swedes are talking about. And of course, that would bring the war to Northern Europe because much Russian oil transits through the straits between Denmark and Sweden. So, I mean, I think they're fully capable of that. And then they're talking of sanctioning Iran. You know, sanctioning Iran when, as you said, you've just given us a catalogue of the things that Israel has done wrong, and not a word about that, as far as I can tell. So really incredible. And what was that first scandal you said involved? You said something in passing that the Telegraph, the British press, are focusing on some anti-Semitic incident or something.
It's a major anti-genocide, an anti-murder march in London, and a representative of the so-called campaign against anti-Semitism, which is funded partly by the Israeli embassy, Gideon Falter. He's also on the board of the Jewish National Fund, who are all about expanding his illegal so-called settlements in the West Bank. So a really ardent Zionist. And he basically picked a fight with a policeman who was trying to prevent him from directly confronting perfectly peaceful protesters on the march. Now, because the policeman described Falter, because he was wearing a skull cap, as being openly Jewish, somehow this has been magnified and amplified into a huge, once again, phony anti-Semitism crisis, you know. And Falter's been given airtime to smear the marchers as terrorist supporters and racists, when he is the racist and his government are the organized terrorists, and the people on the march are simply calling for an end to the mass murder and mutilation of children. Now, I'm pleased to say there has been some pushback on that, because a longer version of the altercation between the police officer and Mr. Falter has been aired on television. And there have been comments by senior policemen saying, if I was in that situation, I would have arrested Mr. Falter for assault and for a breach of the peace. Instead, of course, dare I say, as is often the case with Zionists, he is trying to portray himself here as the victim, as if he was innocently wandering around central London. He actually had bodyguards and film crew with him. So it was obviously a premeditated, pre-organized excursion. And then subsequently claiming that in his innocent wanderings around London, he was confronted by an anti-Semitic police officer who was defending all these terrorist sympathizers. I mean, a total inversion of the truth. But with any luck, people are seeing through it.
Well, we'll keep you on for just a bit because of various reasons. But it's interesting. But strategically, I mean, Israel is really doing badly here. I think.
Sorry to jump back in again quickly. Yeah, the $26 billion granted by Congress dwarfs the annual budget in military aid that the United States gives Israel, which is $3.8 billion a year, $38 billion over 10 years. When that deal was originally negotiated, the Israelis were disappointed that they couldn't come back and ask for more in the meantime. Well, they're getting more now, another $26 billion. The rhetoric on Capitol Hill is that Israel is in a fight for its existence, that it is a staunch ally. We even heard the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, saying it was a biblical requirement as a Christian to support Israel. He obviously has no understanding of the New Testament and what it means. The rhetoric is that Israel is in a existential fight for its survival. Well, that may be, but that fight isn't with Hamas or even Iran or Hezbollah. That fight will come from the fact that it will be a pariah state amongst all right-thinking people from now on.
We've got to, sorry, Basil, we've got to wind up there slowly, but I think that what you're saying, I mean, ironically, I think that Mike Johnson and the Congress might be right in a sense that strategically Israel is in a bad way. And a lot of the mood, I talked to a guest last week, she said that the is funereal in Israel because a lot of right-thinking, clever Israelis can work out that they are incredibly under siege, as it were, you know, for rightly or wrongly, perhaps. But the fact that, you know, all the main Gulf powers, and I think Saudi and Iraq, they've refused the transit of Israeli counterattacks through their territory. So all the American troops based all over the Gulf region, Middle East region, it's all for naught because basically Israel has lost the entire East diplomatically. Anyway, we'll carry on with the topic of on this and other topics in the next hour, Basil. Thank you very much. That's our political editor, Basil Valentine, and we're going to go on to our first guest. This is a Pelle Neroth Taylor Show on TNT on this Monday afternoon.
TNT. Sonia Poulton.
If the British courts take the USA's poor application seriously and extradite Julian Assange, they will almost certainly have blood on their hands. Those are my words, not Stella's, although I know she thinks the same. She said so. The court has refused to address the very credible evidence that the CIA planned to kidnap and assassinate Julian Assange. We should all remember this moment the next time the UK or the USA dare to claim we are a free society while lecturing other countries about their lack of press freedoms. Julian Assange has been denied his freedom for 15 years. The entire process has been his punishment.
Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real, dude.
Not bad, huh?
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show on this afternoon in April. Spring's finally arrived here in Scandinavia, and there's spring in the step of Alex Craner, who's worked as a market analyst, researcher, trader, and hedge fund manager. He is a returning guest who's creator of the iSystem Trend Following, publisher of the Daily Trend Compass Reports, and is a contributor to Zero Hedge. He has his own brilliant Substack page in his name, alexcriner.substack.com, I think it is. And he has always thoughtful and brilliant ideas, sometimes coming completely left field. And one of them is today, which is can we end these endless wars? Well, what if we just don't pay our warmongering elites? What do you say, Alex? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again. Well, you know, I have to give credit where credit is due. This idea doesn't come from me. It comes from a gentleman in the UK named Chris Coverdale. He brought it to my attention, and the podcast host, Crypto Rich. Okay. And so basically, you know, Chris Coverdale has worked out that there's a legal way to withhold your taxes from the tax collector. Because there are certain legal obligations that the government, many of the governments in the world, if not most of them, have, and that is they have to abide by the UN Charter. They have to abide by something called Terrorism Financing Convention, which has been ratified into the domestic law by 188 nations around the world. This Terrorism Financing Convention was passed, adopted in 1999, and formerly it was called the International Convention for the Suppression of the Financing of Terrorism. So a bit of a sausage there, but nonetheless, it's domestic law in 188 nations around the world. And then there's the 1998 Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, which has been ratified by 128 nations. And basically, the gist of this legal framework is that it has made it illegal for any person, and primarily we're talking about physical person, to donate money to any other person if they suspect that this money might be used to finance terrorism or war. And it doesn't matter, the law is also clear on this, it doesn't matter if the other person receiving the money is a head of state or a minister of finance or the king himself. So the way Mr. Coverdale worked this out is that you pay your tax bill not to the tax collector, but into a tax trust. And then you tell your government that, here, I have put the money in this trust, and it is yours, but I want to have reassurance that this money will not be used for any kind of illegal activity, because I myself might be liable if I finance illegal activity. And under UN Charter, war itself is illegal.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so basically, it appears that the government officials have an extremely hard time dealing with this, because when you ask them specifically for a reassurance that this money will not be used for an illegal activity like funding terror or war, they actually cannot give that reassurance. And then what happens is that they don't know how to deal with you, because you're going through all the legal procedures, right? You're abiding you're not breaking the law, you're compliant with the law, but they cannot give you the reassurance which would make it possible for you to release the money from the trust to the tax collector. So basically, I find that that's a very that's an idea very much worthwhile exploring and implementing where possible, and it should be possible in all the nations that have these trust laws enacted in a certain way, which is UK, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States, because that kind of seeds the system with friction, and I think that at the very least, it would force the government to be a lot more transparent about how they use the money, and it would force the whole issue out into the open to debate. And you know, like once people have an open insight into the way their money is used and what it's used for, they would be a lot more involved with how their money is going to be used.
Alex, we'll just go into a break in a moment. We'll continue on this very topic after the news break, but I'll just summarize what you talked about. Because earlier on in the program, I was saying, you know, obviously the US, Mike Johnson seems to have betrayed his MAGA constituency by passing this gigantic, or ensuring by presenting it to the floor, that this gigantic aid package to Israel and Ukraine, Israel maxed up much bigger than it was before, and so basically encouraging a crime. And what's happening is the MAGA people are kind of stunned. What's all this? Why isn't we not spending money on our own borders and our own opioid epidemics and what have you? But of course, if we implemented what you said, that could be the beginning of the people taking back control, and taxes is something very close to people's hearts. But we'll talk a little bit more about that after a very quick news break. This is the Pelinirov Taylor Show on TNT News Talk. Back with Alex after the break.
Real news.
Don't get it confused.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister has lashed out at ex-owner Elon Musk for refusing to comply with his government's censorship demands. It comes as both sides of Australia's parliament step up their efforts to censor whatever they deem to be inappropriate or fake news on social media. And US lawmakers have been slammed for waving Ukrainian flags on the floor of the House of Representatives after approving another $60 billion for Kyiv's war effort.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Pelinero Tele Show. We're talking about, we've got the brilliant Alex Kreiner with us, who has talked to another guy out in the Twitter sphere or blogosphere about the brilliant idea of withholding taxes to our terrorist governments under UN legislation that actually provides cover for that. And I just found a document. In fact, the British government seems to accept this, because I'm just quoting here, in a little known 2000 case referencing the TA 2000, which is a piece of legislation. The UK Supreme Court ruled that government's actions could indeed be illegal and qualify as terrorism. Quoting here, as a matter of ordinary language, the definition of terrorism would seem to cover any violence or damage to property if it's carried out with a view to influence a government or IGO, intergovernmental organization, I guess, in order to advance a very wide range of causes. Thus, it would appear to extend to military or quasi-military activity aimed at bringing down a foreign government, even where that activity is approved officially or unofficially by the UK government. The UK Supreme Court furthermore underscored the TA 1000 does not exempt, nor make an exception, nor create a defense, nor exculpate what some would describe as terrorism in a just cause. Terrorist action outside the United Kingdom, which involves the use of firearms and explosives resulting in a danger to life, is a terrorism. So does that inculpate the UK government? I guess we could send our lawyers into doing something like that. Any thoughts about that?
No, I think it absolutely does. And I think that to the extent that citizens' arrest is a possibility, it would give legitimate ground for two citizens to arrest their government officials for a whole host of reasons, not just international terrorism and war, but also perhaps for the, you know, crimes committed during the pandemic, because that could qualify as terrorism against your own domestic populations.
Indeed, yeah. And I guess that the Nord Stream as well. I was just talking to a guy. I saw you retweeted it. You might not be an expert on it, but I'll just remind people who don't watch every show. Last week, I had on a guy called Erik Andersson, and I'd recommend you re-listen to the podcast and seek him out, because he's worked his way through the legal documentation so that you don't have to. And basically, it's what's coming up in the UK courts, I think next month, or forgive me if I'm wrong, but quite soon, that show that Lloyd's, which is the world's largest insurer and the very heart of the British deep state, City of London kind of complex, are refusing to pay out to the Nord Stream company, which is based in Switzerland, saying that it was an act of government or act of war by government, and that's force majeure or whatever they call it. So what does that mean? Will they have to prove it in court? And because they surely they can't just say it with citing you know, media coverage. It's quite a large sum of money. We're talking about $400 million that they're avoiding to have to pay out. Will they settle out of court? Is it part of this shadow boxing sort of strategic game that we don't even know that's taking place between the insurers and the company, which should end with a settlement? Because some of the Lloyd's names are actually former intelligence officials in the UK deep state. So lots of things going on behind the scenes. Have you got any thoughts about that? Had you heard about that, that Lloyd's are refusing to pay up?
Yes. Well, I do have thoughts about it, but it's difficult to predict how this might evolve, because somebody's going to end up with a legal liability over that. And so it's extremely important for the governments who are involved to stick with the plausible deniability. Now, the Lloyd's case, if it ends up in court, it's going to put a whole lot of documents and depositions and testimonies on record. So I would predict that they will try everything to avoid that showdown, and that somebody is going to end up paying that money out of some side pocket slush fund that's going to be used for that kind of purpose, because you know, but at this time they are stepping all over their own toes, because you know, there were probably people on their own side who had exposure to the Nord Stream through, you know, bond holdings, stock holdings, whatever, and now they got shafted by the actions of governments who effected this act of industrial terrorism. And I think we know which governments those are, even though we don't know all the governments that were involved, because I strongly believe that the British government was also involved in the action.
Well, I mean, I tend to agree with you, and I think that what the Seymour Hersh says, it's the Americans, citing his CIA contacts, and then you've got the kind of semi-official version that's been leaked out by the CIA, which the Germans are pushing, which is that it's the Ukrainians, and everyone's saying, well, the Ukrainians, they don't have the capacity to do that anyway, and were they supposed to go on this sailing yacht, which traveled around all the ports of Sweden and then made themselves very visible? It sounds as if that was like a, you know, a patsies. They're making a show for it when the serious guys were really doing it. But I tend to think it was the British, because the British kind of see Northern Europe as their territory historically. But do you have any evidence for the fact that it was the British? Because they said they've been left out in the recent.
We have the never denied text message that was sent within the minute of the explosions by Liz Truss, who was the prime minister at the time, to Antony Blinken, saying, quote unquote, it's been done, or it was done, or, you know, okay, so now I don't know the exact quote, but I think it's been done. And then, you know, there was Radek Sikorsky, who almost instantly kind of pointed the finger at the United States, showing the photograph of the, you know, of the ocean surface with the gas coming out, and saying, thank you, USA. And, you know, Radek Sikorsky is an interesting character himself. He was used to be a British subject before he went back to participate in politics in Poland. He was a member of the Bullingdon Club. He was recruited into the Bullingdon Club by none other than Boris Johnson himself. So they were all big buddy pals, and they clearly coordinate a foreign policy with the shadow cabinet in Britain. One of the members of the same club is also the current foreign minister, David Cameron. He also a former member of the Bullingdon Club.
Well, that's very interesting. So I think that I think you could well have a point there. And just to summarize what we talked about in the last couple of minutes, is that this Nord Stream thing is going to come up in the courts. There are going to be a lot of depositions, and then somebody's going to shy back. It's a high stakes game, because the media will be forced to cover it at some point, and these will be on the record, and it'll be history on trial, as it were, recent history on trial to some extent. And you have a central institution of the British City of London, which has its reputation, depends on its reputation on being neutral from the British government and its foreign policy, because people want to park their insurance there. If it's seen as part of the British state, Lloyd's will not get the third world or the developing global south's insurance money, just as people won't put their money in the dollar anymore when the dollar just becomes weaponized by the Americans in the foreign policy attacks on Russia. Anyway, thank you very much, Alex Kreiner. You can find him on Substack, and I'm sure we'll have him on again very soon. And thanks for talking about how we can withhold our taxes. And we'll certainly, that's certainly very appealing for many of us. Talk to you soon, Alex. This is the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show on TNT News Talk.
Thank you very much for having me, Pelle.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school. Hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mum, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Selbos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media garbage. Pelle Neroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show on this spring afternoon. Well, we were just talking about the courts and how Lloyds and the Nord Stream company are at loggerheads shortly. No stranger to the British courts either are the British tabloids, and there's been a long-term scandal surrounding alleged hacking and settlements in and out of court, where celebrities have been very, very angry about the alleged intrusiveness of the British press. Who better to talk about that than Christine Hart, who's a journalist, private investigator, and Sunday Times best-selling author. She was trained by MI6 officers and then ex-CID officers, and worked as a private detective for many years. She's intimately involved with some of these scandals, or whatever you like to call them. And she's going to tell us a little bit about the recent developments. She's a returning guest, and we're very pleased to have her again. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Hi, Pelle. How are you? Thank you for having me on again.
I'm good to see you. This Hugh Grant is in the news. Could you tell us a little bit about that whole story? Because he has been a sort of vehement opponent of the tabloids. And what's the latest on that story?
Yes, well, he got an undisclosed payout. I think it was a few million that he got out of Rupert Murdoch. It was put out that it's about burglaries and housebreaking. But having been a part of Murdoch's empire back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was no burglaries going on. There were no listening to landlines. They just didn't have people that could do that. So most private investigators worth their salt wouldn't ever work for the British tabloids. So they didn't, they didn't have this kind of thing. They hired ex-SAS guys sometimes, but even the SAS would have stopped at burglaries. And so it's quite interesting that Hugh Grant's put this out there. Well, his pets in the media have put this out there. And it makes the public think there's a war between the good guys and the bad guys. But of course, there isn't any good guys at the moment. So it's actually just one political faction of the cabal fighting another one. So they're putting out this kind of thing, but actually Murdoch's paying out over good old phone hacking that wasn't even phone hacking. It was some dude listening into people's mobile messaging machines. It wasn't, you know, I was at the News of the World for many years, and I was also at The Sun, and it was like carry-on investigations. There weren't very many investigations going on. It was very bumbling. They had Mazza Mahmood, who was dressing up as a fake sheikh. It was bumbling. And this is why when somebody brought in fact, a man called John Boyle, who's never been spoken about by Hugh Grant, which is strange, isn't it? You'd think he'd be shouting his name from the rooftops. You'd think Haktov would be shouting his name from the rooftops. But no, they don't care. What it is, it's a political agenda, left versus right, right versus the middle. And the public get fed a pile of nonsense, you know, which upsets me, because we look around and we look, who's the good guys, who's the bad guys, you know, is Hugh Grant this amazing good guy that from four weddings and a funeral, this lisping, you know, kind of hero that we should all put our hearts out to? Well, no, because Hugh Grant's just looking after Hugh Grant, basically. And so, you know, we have this superhero put out there, this good-looking man who foiled burglaries and landline tappings. Well, it wasn't really like that. He got a payout from Murdoch over having his phone messages listened into. And why they don't finger the main man that brought this into Fleet Street, I have no idea. That's very suspicious, I think.
Well, that's interesting. So basically, just to summarize the thing, you're sort of Hugh Grant saying that if he playing a fiddle, as it were, saying that even if he'd won in court, you'd have to pay the other side's legal fees, so he settled out of court, ho-hum, but he's really the good guy, honest. So, well, it's interesting. So the worst thing that the tabloids did dial in, and then they got the, you know, the PIN code of the recipient, of the celebrity, and then listened in. And there was nothing more complicated than that. Was that the extent of it, Christine?
Yeah, because basically, you know, I was shocked when I got to Fleet Street and I saw the lack of intelligence and the lack of knowledge of journalists not knowing how to investigate. And a lot of the times they came to me to say to me, how do we stand up this story? How do we get into it? They had no investigative brain. And of course, when phone hacking came in, they were so excited. Not even their lack of investigative brain showed up so much in that they took something that's illegal, something that, you know, when you spy, you have to be a ghost. Well, they're leaving a massive footprint because the people's messages are listened to. And so they know that, you know, someone says, well, I left you a message, Prince Harry. Where is it? And then he hears it in his listen box. And then, you know, my messages were being listened to as well. This is how stupid the journalists were in Fleet Street. And of course, they all ended up in prison. And now there's a big thing about, oh, there was burglaries and landlines listened to, and there was James Bond abseiling through the window. Somebody broke into Liz Hurley's flat and put a bug in her knicker drawer. You know, it's all very sexy. It's all very, but it's BS, sadly. And, you know, think that the claimants are using that to kind of big it up, to attack the newspapers that they don't particularly like, because they haven't got their left-wing woke agenda. And this is what's going on. And of course, it's all funded by, I believe it's funded out in Israel by Gunnar Cook. You know, it's all, that needs to be looked into, but it's not being looked into because the BBC are on board with this, with their little left-wing agenda, and the public get fed a load of nonsense. This is oligarchs and the elite arguing with each other over which political excess they believe in, and we are supposed to sit there, the big bad media are getting squished. Well, the big bad media are never going to be squished. You know, we're in a matrix, we're controlled, and of course the media is the propaganda arm of the elite, and we the peasants are kept down by.
But I'll say one thing about the tabloids was that they are now famous for this fake sheikh story. That wasn't made up, was it? Can you tell us that story? Because were you not involved in it in some way?
Yes, no, I worked with Mazen Mahmood on a few jobs. We met Sylvester Stallone together and a few other jobs. I stopped working with him. He nearly got me murdered. So it's interesting, though, because I went on Amazon Prime and talked about it, not for very long. It seems like there is an agenda when it comes to this Asian report. He's working class, he's Asian. So he's been thrown out over the castle wall. And, you know, he is the one that everybody's going for. The Sky, there's a new Sky documentary on him, apparently called Fake. And there's lots of people monstering him. Now, when I went on Amazon, I talked about the people above him and that he was just, you know, a working class person. He was more or less told what to do. Now, I personally knew him. I personally saw him being told what to do. And I know his personality close up, and he was a people pleaser. So it kind of annoys me that they get these documentaries out. They put people on there that are mixed up with Hugh Grant and hacked off. They talk about Mazen Mahmood, yet they don't know him from Adam. It's like me doing an interview about you. You know, what would I really say? So on these, on the Sky one, it's just a complete monstering. Nobody looks into, well, hang on, what was he actually like? Hang on, and why did he do that? And it's my firm belief that he was a dyed-in-the-wool people pleaser. He was in a white man's world. He was Asian. He was working class. He got swept away. Oh, what am I doing here on this Masonic chessboard? And he just did exactly what they told him to do. And so he just targeted the people that they told him to target.
Christine, just because we've got a lot of Europeans and Americans and Australians, and God knows, on this audience who have known about the fake Sheikh. Who was he exactly? And basically, well, he was hung out to dry. Yeah.
Yes, he dressed up as a sheikh. He was quite a good looking guy, so he could pass himself off as Arab royalty when actually he was Pakistani. So he went around going up to celebrities, Sylvester Stallone, Sarah Ferguson, Sven-Goran Eriksson, a lot of others, a lot of models, which I totally disagree with, you know, attacking women. I was attacked by the press. I was a front page story before I entered the press, which I was hurt far more than Hugh Grant, far more than any celebrities that are talking about Mazen Mahmood. And this is why I know that he was dominated. He was controlled. He was a mere puppet for what was above him. But nobody wants to hear this because it's elite and elite. There's no tearing out of birds. So it's just a pretense, as always.
Just to summarize, if I can get, so basically there's this documentary on Amazon or Sky or whatever that basically Sky. Kind of demonizes him and turns him into some kind of real villain, and you're saying, well, it's unjustified because he's just a small cog in the machine, and he's kind of picked out now for his color, maybe, you know, and his lack of ability to sort of fight back, or he doesn't have the connections or the networks, and he's kind of used, but in fact he was controlled and just a little guy, and we don't go after the big guys because, you know, elites cover for each other.
Right.
That's more or less the point. So it's not it's not a great documentary if you want to get to the bottom of things. It's just a sort of superficial attack on this mimic or guy who likes disguises.
Yes. And I want to make it clear, it's the Sky documentary that's coming out. Yeah, it's, you know, the one on Amazon, I think they tried their best. It's called Fake Sheikh. I appear on it for a few minutes.
Right.
But the new Sky one is just a monstering of him without, you know, and I like Bruce Goodison, who's made it. You know, we met and had dinner. And but, you know, I think he needs to go under a little bit, you know. Yeah, the problem is, Pelly, there's a problem when there's a charismatic actor like Hugh Grant involved. Everybody just wants to kiss his bottom, you know. And so the truth doesn't get uncovered because everybody's so busy wanting to be buddies with this charismatic figure, you know. And is he... is he a good leader for everyone to follow?
Well, a lot of people who work with Hugh Grant end up not liking him, apparently. Anyway, Christine Hart, we thank you for offering us a window onto the world of sort of tabloid spying, private investigations, blah, blah, blah. You've got this christinehart.co.uk website, and I recommend people, and we're certain to have you on again as soon. So people watch TNT and you'll get more Christine Hart and your interesting stories. Thank you very much. We're going to go into the news now. This is the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show, and we'll be back for our second hour after the break.
Thanks, Pelle.
Thanks, so great.